Chapter 14.
If drunk with sight of power we lose, wild tongues that have not thee in awe, such boastings as the Gentiles use, or lesser breeds without the law. Lord God of hosts, be with us yet, lest we forget, lest we forget. Rudyard Kipling, Recession.
Greens Creek, North Carolina, United States of America, Sol 3, 22,3800 hours, EDT, Monday, September 28, 2009, AD. Paul Kilzer grinned as he tapped the controls for the close-in defense systems and a ripple of fire tore out from the Shiva. Reeves had apparently been anticipating this because he had driven right into a mass of puzzling and the millions of ball bearings tore through the group like a mechanical thresher. It's good to be the king, Kilzer chuckled as the Shiva tracks grounded the aliens. I think I remember something about use their guts for track grease? Patton, Pruitt said over the intercom. Why, I almost feel sorry for those poor kraut bastards. I've often wondered what he would have done with the Pazline. LeBlanc stared at the CEOI for a second, then shook his head. Alpha, this is Battalion. What's your situation? She waited a moment, then keyed the radio again as the Abrams hit the bottom of the slope and pitched her around like a marionette. Bravo! Charlie! Anybody, this net, damn it! This is, oh hell, this is Captain Hutchinson's RTO, ma'am, the radio operator for the Alpha Company commander panted. The company just got up and started charging after the Shiva, ma'am. The captain's trying to get them stopped. Stopped, hell, she shouted. All stations, this net, you will move forward and aggressively engage the Pazline. Support the Shiva. Move forward. Any company commander who doesn't keep up with his company is going to be relieved. And the last company to Savannah is on extra duty for a month. Don't stop them. Push them. She flipped frequencies and snarled as the tank dropped into a stream bed and shook her around again. This is no way to run a railroad, she muttered. Scouts, she snapped, keying the mic. Alpha 6-7, over. She remembered that the scout platoon commander was a graduate of VMI, a regular of sorts. And apparently he could keep up with the damn CEOI even in the middle of a battle. Although, that would be easy if he were still sitting back at Church Hill. Where are you? She snapped. About 400 meters behind the Shiva, ma'am, the platoon leader said calmly. In the background, she could hear the snarl of a Gatling gun. It's a pretty exciting place to be at the moment. She popped up through the TC hatch and looked around. We're coming up behind you, about a click back and catching up, she said, then paused. Be advised, there's a puzzling group to your left rear. She grabbed the pintle-mounting Gatling gun and sent a stream of fire into the mass. Otan Andoral couldn't decide where to turn. The humans, who normally fought like a bot, were everywhere. His ult had poured fire into the massive human tank, but it was as if they were scratching the sides of an ultpost. Now the human tanks were flying forward all around him, and he couldn't decide where to target his fire. But when one of them started firing at him, it was pretty plain. For wit we are about to receive, Glynis muttered as she hit the seat switch and dropped into the belly of the tank. The vehicle shuddered, and the temperature jumped noticeably as a plasma round glanced off the front glacis plate. A moment later, an HVM round ripped her hatch cover away into the night and filled the interior with reflected searing white light and heat. But by then, the gunner had slewed the main gun on target and opened up with a main and coaxial. The Abrams main battle tank was originally designed for the sole purpose of killing other tanks, almost assuredly Soviet and ex-Soviet designs. It had advanced composite armor, a quick-firing stabilized 120mm main gun, sophisticated targeting systems, nuclear, biological, and chemical protection, and an amazing turn of speed supplied by its Lycoming's jet turbine engine. Furthermore, on battlefields across the globe, it had proven itself the finest machine in the world for that task, able to both outfight and outmaneuver any other tank on the planet. 70-plus tons of fast-rolling, incredibly deadly meanness. But with the coming of the Pazline, changes in design were inevitable. Pazline didn't really have anything worth hitting with a 120mm depleted uranium dart. Or if they did, it was too large to care about being scratched by an Abrams. However, the base tank was the finest piece of war machinery ever designed, and it seemed a shame to simply throw all that engineering away. At first, when they turned out to be highly vulnerable to plasma and even 3mm railgun fire, the tank seemed doomed. But technology came to their aid in the form of new and lighter armor materials. The M1A4's turret and primary frontal armor was a layer of battle steel, room temperature superconductor nanotube composite, and synthetic sapphire threading. The combination meant that frontally it could shut off the fire of anything but a direct and unlucky HVM hit. From the side, it was not so well armored, but if the Posleen were on your flank, you were screwing up anyway. To reduce the possibility of being flanked, and to deal with the main problem of the Posleen, the fact that there were just way too many of them, the gunnery of the tanks was modified. On either side of the turret, add-on weapons were installed. These were 25mm cannons, like the main gun of a Bradley. Where the Bradley had one gun, the Abrams were mounted with first two, one on either side, then four, and finally eight. The 50-caliber TC gun was replaced with a 7.62 Gatling gun capable of hurling 8,000 rounds a minute, and the coaxial 7.62 machine gun mounted alongside the main gun was switched out for another. Even accepting their main gun, the A4 Abrams could hurl an amazing mass of lead. The main gun, however, remained a problem. It seemed a shame to pull the weapon, since it was about as good as it got from a cannon perspective. Finally, it was decided to leave the cannon in place and simply change the ammo mix. The ammo bin still carried a few silver bullets for old time's sake, but the majority of the rounds stored in an A4 were canister. Unlike the complex depleted uranium or high-explosive anti-tank rounds, canister was simplicity in itself. In effect, it was a giant shotgun shell. Each round held 2,000 flechettes packed in ahead of a powerful firing charge. As Glynis's seat hit the bottom of its elevation and another plasma round glanced off the armored front plate, the gunner laid his reticle on the company of Posleen, toggled his joystick to all, and hit the firing button. The Abrams didn't fire quite as many rounds, or as quickly, as the Metal Storm, but the effect was similar. There was a blast of what looked like liquid fire, and then the Posleen company started to come apart. The fire had only put one round of canister downrange, but it had taken out the center third of the company by itself, and as the gunner swept the tank's secondary weapons from side to side, the rest ceased to exist. "And that's what they call ballin' the jack," the gunner muttered as the loader slammed in another round of canister. The entire engagement had taken less than 4 seconds. "Good job," LeBlanc said, keying her microphone. "Shiva 9, this is Captain LeBlanc. We're closing in on your 6. What's your situation?" Mitchell grimaced and looked over at Indy's panels. Half the systems were yellow, and there were an increasing number of red lights. "Well, we were getting the shit shot out of us, but other than that..." He looked around and realized the fire had started to fall off. "Is it just me, or..." "Major, I personally don't believe it, but it looks like we're clearing this valley," the battalion commander replied with a grin that could be heard over the radio. Mitchell looked at his monitors and snorted. The largest remaining group of Posleen were those around the humans, which he intentionally had not engaged. It was less than a company. Other than those and a few leakers in the side valleys, the way was totally cleared. He snorted again and then began to laugh hysterically. "Major?" Reeves called. They were alone in the compartment, but Mitchell had shut off his radio and was rolling around in his chair laughing as if he couldn't stop. "Sir?" "Oh," the Major gasped, getting some control over his laughter. Oh, shit, sorry, Reeves, shit." "What's so funny, sir?" the driver yelled. "I mean, we still have to get those guys out of there." "I know," Mitchell said, wiping his eyes. "Oh, it's just what I went through in my mind. I was looking around, and all I could think..." He started laughing again until he was heaving. "What? I was just thinking..." Click. Samosin's driver had clearly taken him at his word. Either that, or the boy was just insane. They hit the slope for Deer Creek so fast the Bradley was momentarily airborne and then slammed into the far slope. The general pulled himself upright and waved at the TC. "Tell him he doesn't have to go that fast," he shouted, pulling himself around to look out one of the vision blocks. There wasn't much that could be seen that way, so he waved at the TC again and forced him out of his hatch. When the general finally got up where he could see, it took him a moment to get his bearings. For just a second, he was afraid that he had gotten out ahead of the Shiva, or that the division was just gone. But he quickly noted the light fire going on either side, and the somewhat heavier fire, including the occasional blossom of plasma gun, at the end of the valley. The problem to either side was the lack of fire, and the reason for the lack of fire was a lack of targets. The Bradley was lurching over a carpet of centroid corpses. He gestured for the TC to give up his crewman's helmet and plugged it into the intercom. "Son, don't worry about getting shot. Forget the Shiva for a second and get me up on a hill. I've got to get a look around. The Bradley obediently made a hard left and headed up the nearest slope. There was a house at the top, or had been. It was a shattered shell now, and the Bradley driver added insult to injury, tearing up the driveway and into the yard. But it was a hell of a view. Samosin had snuck up the fighting positions during the battle and seen the valley rippling with Pozleen. What it was filled with now was bodies. Human and Pozleen, but mainly Pozleen. Here and there a fighting vehicle smoked, but looking at the results by the light of the fires and the moon, he was convinced that they had charged across the entire valley at the cost of maybe a half a battalion of troops, and they had been taking that at every few hours during the defense. "Holy Mary, Mother of God," he muttered. "Holy!" He looked down at the TC and shook his head. "Get a squad out on security. Get the RTO to contact headquarters and get me a relay to the General Horner. Tell them to pass on that we've taken Savannah and are preparing to continue the advance." Angela shuddered as the giant tank rolled up the hill towards them. Other tanks, much smaller, were spreading out to either side, and there were other vehicles underneath it. The Pozleen that had been guarding them weren't firing. They seemed as shocked by the situation as the human captives. The hundreds of thousands of Pozleen in the valley were just gone, with the last few survivors being hunted down ruthlessly. And now the tanks are driving up their hill and surrounding their position. The giant tank, it must be one of the Shiva guns she had seen on TV, ground up into within a few dozen yards of the Pozleen and then just stopped. It sat there for what seemed like forever, and then a door opened in the base, flooding white light down onto the ground. An elevator dropped out the door and all the way down to the ground, then opened, and a single human stepped out. He was wearing a trench coat and sunglasses and had a plasma rifle cradled in his arms, muzzle down. He'd put a hand on his pocket and walked up the slope, looking around at the humans and Pozleen as a massive spotlight turned on the top of the Shiva. The spotlight swung around for a moment and then bathed the group in white light, flooding out the sight of the massed tanks. But in the darkness, the sound of opening doors, squeaking turrets, and pounding feet made it clear what was going on. The single human walked up to the group and looked around until he spotted the God King on his saucer. He walked over to the alien, looked him up and down, and then said one word. "Leave!" Angela looked at the leader of their tormentors and wondered what would happen. If it came to fighting, she was going to hit the ground and hope for the best. She suspected that there were riflemen out there now, but in a fight, if one of the tanks opened fire, it would be all over for the humans. She wasn't sure if the Pozleen could understand English or not. She'd heard that some could, but they never spoke it, just gestured. Usually for a person to put their head down to be cut off. Now, the God King looked down at the human and slowly fluttered his crest. He had to know more or less what was being demanded of it, and what the penalty would be for refusal. Finally, he raised his crest to its full height, lifted his plasma cannon slowly, and turned his saucer around. In seconds, all the Pozleen had faded into the night. Angela looked up at the giant tank, the Shiva, and wondered for a moment why there was a picture of a rabbit on the front. Then she passed out. Mitchell lowered the stairs of the personnel door and waved a hand in the general direction of his head at General Samosin. The general, who was sitting on the troop ramp of a Bradley, just grunted and went back to spooning down MRE beef stew. He had taken off his helmet and LBA, and all of it was piled on the tail of the track. "I just talked to Keaton," the general said after another bite. He wiped up a bit on his chin, then wiped it off his hands into his filthy BDUs. "He kept trying to get me to say that I was back at Greens Creek, especially when I told him my lead element was reporting from halfway to Rocky Knob." "I'm beginning to wish I still was, sir," the colonel replied, looking up at the Shiva. It didn't look too bad from the back, but he knew the sides looked like Swiss cheese. "There's going to be one hell of a bill for this repair." "Oh, don't be that way," the general grunted. "You're the hero of the piece. Do you know how rare it is to recover Pozleen captives? If it wasn't for me controlling the traffic, and, of course, the Pozleen still being all over the place, why, we'd be crawling with reporters." "Ah, fame," Mitchell snorted, and then sat down on the perforated metal stairs. They dug into his butt, but since he had ached from head to toe, it wasn't really noticeable. "That and a few billion credits will get this Shiva gun running again. We're not exactly dead in the water, General, but we're going to need some repairs before we're fully combat effective again. Among other things, we lost the main power bus for the metal storms right at the end, And we need more Metal Storm packs. I don't know if there are any more around.
Yep.
Samosin glanced up at the wall of metal and then shrugged. Your repair battalion's got priority of movement, and there's a full battalion of Metal Storm supply trucks headed down the road from Asheville. I'll tell the division to map out a spot down the valley for you guys to do your repairs. You still planning on going over Green's Pass? It's easier to access on both sides, sir, Mitchell said with a nod and a yawn. You're going to be swinging in the breeze over the Tennessee Valley, the general noted. I've got all I can handle pushing up this way, and I can't move behind you to support you, not with a whole division. You do too much damage to the roads.
Breaks of the game, the colonel replied.
We can't get across Rocky Knob and not leave anything you can use as a road, and even going up to Betty will tear things up. More than they are, that is.
Samosin looked around and smiled as an Abrams pulled to a stop beside his Bradley.
I think this is about the right cue. Mitchell watched Captain LeBlanc hoist herself out of the turret and chuckled.
Big tank, little lady. I think there's something Freudian there.
I know why you're thinking of Freud, the general replied with a snort.
And I think it's Freudian. I was thinking big gun, little lady.
You sent for me, general, the captain said, saluting. After the general returned the salute, she nodded at Mitchell.
Colonel?
Captain, Mitchell replied soberly. I'd like to thank you for all your support. We wouldn't be here without your unit.
True, she said immodestly, but it wasn't just my battalion, or we both would be dead. I remember reading somewhere Keegan or On Killing. I don't recall which, that the purpose of tanks is not, as it is generally believed, to break the lines by shock, but to get themselves so entrapped by the enemy that it triggers the infantry a rescue reaction.
Oh, look, those stupid tankers are way the hell over there, and if we don't go get them, they're going to get killed.
I thought about that from both sides while we were riding to Balaclava.
Mitchell found himself giggling again and got it under control quickly.
There's probably some truth to that, Captain. Onward, onward, rode the 600.
Major, the general corrected. He reached into his cargo pocket and rummaged around until he found a pair of Major's leaves.
Before you know it, you'll have enough rank to actually be in command, Major.
But I'll still be M.I., the Major said, pinning on first one leaf, then the other. And a female. Two strikes against commanding an infantry battalion.
That, my dear, is why there are waivers, the general said loftily. There will be orders and awards to go along with that later. I've told both the corps commander and General Keaton about your performance on this drive, but for now, we're not done. What's your damage?
I'm down about 20%, the commander replied, abruptly sitting down on the ground. But body count doesn't cover all of that, and I'm missing at least one company commander. Some of them might still be mixed in with the other units, but I think if you did, the bug-out boogie.
If so, the MPs will round them up, Samosin pulled out a notebook and made a notation. I'm going to give you two companies from the 2nd Brigade. One of them's a mech team and the other is motorized. They were in the lead for the first assault and have done some reconsolidation since, so at least they're not green. Consolidate what you have into three companies. That will make you overstrength in each, but I'm sure that will take care of itself.
Yes, sir, LeBlanc replied. What then?
Get refueled and rearmed, he continued. That may take some doing. My inherited staff has not yet grasped the basic concepts of maneuver warfare, such as forward deploying logistics elements.
He looked at her face quizzically.
Why the smile?
Oh, well, she laughed. Refuel and rearm will not be that much of a problem, General. I sent one of my NCOs out to find our supply trucks.
And he did.
Your fuel trucks? The General asked.
Close enough. Somebody's. Might as well be mine. And when he pointed out that he had two fully armed Bradleys with crews, and all they had was some dinky 50 calibers, they got amenable to reason. Alpha and HHC are all refueled and rearmed, and the rest of the unit is pulling maintenance.
The general shook his head and sighed again.
Maybe I should make you my chief of staff. No, forget I said that. I don't want to explain to General Keaton why other divisions are out of fuel and supplies.
Speaking of other divisions, Mitchell said, isn't this about the time that somebody else is supposed to pass through while you reconsolidate?
It would be if there was anyone else to pass through, Samosin grimaced. There's a division coming down from Knoxville, but it's green and short of brigade. It'll probably get in which case I'm going to mix it in my battalions and use them carefully. So, it's just us.
He looked over at LeBlanc and smiled grimly, which is why my operations officer thought I was nuts to send my main mechanized unit off on detached duty.
Oh?
The Major queried, then looked up at the Shiva.
I don't think so.
Major LeBlanc, you and your reinforced battalion are detached to duty in support of Shiva 9 as it makes a flanking maneuver through the Tennessee Valley, the General said.
Oh, shit, the major said, shaking her head. We're fucked. I need you alive and at Franklin, Samosin said to Mitchell's raised eyebrow. I don't need a smoking wreck sitting in the lower Tennessee. Yes, sir, the colonel replied, then shrugged. What the hell? If we get stuck again, Abrams or Jim Dandy feel expedient unstickers. He turned to the major and grinned. We're going where eagles get nosebleeds. You understand? Oh, yeah, the major replied bitterly. But what the hell? If that big old bastard can make it, so can we. I hope. I'll see you both in Franklin, Samosin said, scooping up the last of his stew and climbing laboriously to his feet. Shiva supported, he said, licking the spoon and dropping it in its cargo pocket as he tossed the empty MRE packet to the side. Fuel getting to tanks, troops moving forward. Now I have to go back and straighten out that clusterfuck of a headquarters I inherited. Drop a bomb on it, sir, LeBlanc replied. It's the only way to be sure. Nah, think of the paperwork. I've got enough headaches. Move, 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 move! O'Neill shouted, bouncing down the scorched side of Black Rock Mountain. It was a race against time. Somewhere to the south, there were undoubtedly Pazline racing to reach the mountain city line before the ACS. The suits needed to not just reach the gap before them, but to have enough time to get dug in and set. If they were caught in the open by the advancing Pazline, they might as well slit their own throats. Bastards, Stewart muttered. They filled in all our positions. The Pazline had driven a road through the former defenses of the battalion, and all but the outermost holes had been filled in. In addition, all the laboriously constructed communications trenches were gone. The spare ammunition and power packs had been distributed to the platoons of the battalion, but they were with individual suits. If they didn't get a way to move the ammo around, it was going to be cut off as soon as the Pazline arrived and created a no-movement zone above ground. Back to work, O'Neill said. Bravo, Charlie, start digging in. Reapers in tech suits, make yourselves some holes and then start digging trenches. Everyone get below ground level as fast as possible. Duncan looked at the area designed for his company and began detailing platoon sectors. Marauders on the line, command suits to the rear, he said, detailing individual zones for the platoons. Move, people! He reached a point halfway between the designated area for the battalion command team and dropped a digging charge on the ground, glancing down the defile as he did so. There was still no sign of Pazline, and that bothered him. Stewie, scouts? He asked on a discreet channel to the battalion S2. I've only got two left, Stewart said irritably. I was going to move them up the flanks. Be nice to know when the boys were coming to tea, the company commander said. Agreed, Stewart replied. Sunday waited until all his reapers were dug in and then dropped three more digging charges, opening up the area and connecting a couple of the holes to the consternation of the occupants. That was a little close, sir, Pickersgill called. The charge had blown the side of his hole in on him. I could have dropped it on you and it wouldn't have mattered, Sunday replied, dropping into the middle of the combined reaper section. He carried the disguised box down the hill and now opening it up, pulling out the weapon inside. It was in three pieces, and he carefully assembled them below ground level, ensuring that none of the other suits saw what he had concealed in the oversized hole. Get started on the trenches, he said, when the suits had finished opening out and finishing their holes. I'll be here. What are you fiddling with, sir? McAvoy asked, looking up over the side of his hole. Don't worry about that, Tommy said, with an unseen grin. I'll show you when you get back. Stewart looked at the take from the scout that had just reached the top of Hogsback and frowned. Hey, boss, we've got zero additional fire support, right? He asked jokingly. Yep, O'Neill replied. There was a pause as he was obviously checking the raw take as well. Well, things are going to get interesting. I'd say 15 more minutes until they're around the corner, Stewart commented. That's enough time and more, O'Neill said with a quizzical tone. They're not moving as fast as usual, Stewart admitted. But can you see what's between the blocks? Gaps, O'Neill responded. And look right on the edge of the picture, he continued. There was another pause. They're spacing out their battalions. So, they hit in a solid stream? Stewart mused. I don't like smart Pazline, boss. I don't like them at all. Well, they may be smart, but they're slower. Let's use the time as well as we can. He looked up to the mountains on either side and frowned. And let's just hope they don't figure out how to climb.